The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the NBA.
What that actually
you know what I mean?
Yeah, that actually should be the NBA final song. This is that's a big lead-in song, I'm
especially
surprised.
This year.
That's awesome. The lyrics, it all makes sense. Anyway,
I thought that song was extremely appropriate, especially the way that these NBA finals have panned out. It's basically. Both everybody on both teams is competing for their first ring. Like nobody on any of these teams has got a ring.
No, that's right. A few of them have been to finals, but
we'll
go through that. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. This is NBA Conference Final talk. East and the West, obviously. So that's all sort of sewed up. So we'll go through East Division. Firstly, we may as well start in the Eastern Conference. Flip it around. Milwaukee. Getting over, look, a very, very good, very admirable Atlanta Hawks team, but in four games to two, in six games.
I guess a gallant Atlanta Hawks.
A young
nobody Atlanta thought nobody about. Thought that that Atlanta was going to get anywhere near the conference finals. I guess this series was sort of marred by injury a little bit. Towards the end of the series, and I think that sort of took away some of the gloss of this series because it started with a bang, really. Like what Atlanta has done in the previous two series that they've played, they're the road team, and they've come into the away team's building and stolen game one. That's the third series in a row now, and it's just like, wow, like that they're getting the jump on teams early.
Yeah.
And Trae Young in that first game, 48 points. Like, good God.
I was about to say, didn't they really, I mean, obviously leading into this game they did, but didn't they, for just from this game alone, didn't they just focus on Trae Young for this whole series? It was, to his credit, he did really well. Like, you know, some of those players where it's completely focused on you, especially when you're 22.
Could fold,
but you know he carried his team up until he got injured very well. But that, like you said, that first game, Jesus Christ! I mean, I thought he was a good stats bad, you know, bad team sort of player, if that makes sense. But I from this, not just this game, but not even just this series, but this whole entire NBA series, he has absolutely grown in my eyes.
And he's been a good facilitator as well, because he attracts so much attention.
Yeah.
Then he can almost, and not that he's going, or he is at James Harden's level or anything on that. I'm not saying that. I'm just sort of being, you know, a comparable player where he attracts so much attention that if you can sort of get him off the 3-point line, but he's still good at those mid-range floaters, a little bit of he's got a decent sort of mid-range game and can get to the hoop.
Yeah,
he's not just a one string bow where it's just I'm just going to launch 16, 17 threes per game. he's got a little bit more to his game than that, and he's a fairly good facilitator.
Yeah, and just you're right. I mean, especially in this game, besides the obvious 48 points, he still was able, even though he attracted more players, he still was able to get off 11 assists. So,
that's right.
Chiming in with that double-double, nearly a triple-double if you got three more rebounds. John Collins is another player that sort of stepped up in this series and in this game as well. I mean, he got a double-double himself, 23 and 15 rebounds. He's an interesting player. I'm still don't know what to make of him. Like, I don't know. It's interesting because he's declined, obviously, that massive contract, and we'll probably talk about that in a second. But I don't know where or if he slots into this team perfectly just because of their makeup. That's all I'm sort of getting at.
I mean, he seems to be okay, you know, at this point in time. I think it would be, you know, a bit of a mistake maybe to not so much let him walk, but they've got to try and adjust, you know, adjust their game a little bit to try and there'll be plenty of teams out there that'll be looking at him. Yeah. You know, he's a restricted free agent next year. So Obviously whoever comes at him with some money, Atlanta has the option to equal that, to match that. Mm-hmm. So that's, I guess, he might even just wait and see what's going to happen and see what he's worth.
See what happens on the horizon. Moving on to that second game, it was an all it felt like an all round effort, but that second game where the Bucks blew out, you know, by 30 basically, the Hawks. It was an all-round team effort, that one. Like, everybody was sort of chiming in when they needed to. It wasn't just, obviously, just Giannis. Lopez, you know, got some buckets.
That realistically, that has to be, you know, the secret to success. Like, that's mm-hmm. that's how they've mm-hmm. got to get things done. They've got to get it done as, you know, as a full team game and not just rely on Giannis. Like, you know, it's, you know, that 16 points from Lopez. Like, Chris Middleton sort of got off to a bit of a rocky start in this series, like he has in previous series as well. I don't know what it is. He's just not getting off to the best starts to the series, but comes through, you know, in the clutch. And like he did at the end of this series, because he basically had to be the man.
Holy hell, no, that game right. later. My God, he was, you know, talk about clutch. That was clutch in such a short amount of space of time.
But, like, even Drew Holiday as well, like, you know, as this series went on, started to get better and better. And that's, I mean, you don't want to continue to do that throughout the playoffs and get off to poor starts to the series, because you're just putting unnecessary pressure on yourself, especially, yeah, throughout the Eastern Conference anyway. Like, they have been, yeah, they have been, they could have done better throughout the regular season to try and make sure that they were the highest seed in each series. But, you know, in this one here against Atlanta, they finished third and Atlanta finished fifth. So they're going to be, they're the highest seed and they get home court advantage. So it just, they can't, not give they can't give away that home court advantage, which basically what they did after game one. But you know once you split your home series, then the pressure is on, especially going to Atlanta for game three and four. And Atlanta were pretty ordinary in game two. Like their shooting percentage was ordinary. They only hit 9 threes. You know, shot like 41% from the field. Like, it just wasn't good enough to basically, you know, sort of fall flat mm-hmm. after what they did in game one is I thought was a little concerning, I think.
Yeah, I mean, even game three, I still felt they were competitive in that game, but they still fell a little bit flat. You know, it's just for I guess what I've seen in Atlanta during this sort of whole series, if you know what I mean. I mean, Middleton in that game three, he just had a career night, didn't he? He was just insane.
Middleton was massive. He had 38 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. But I think what people will take out of that game is, you know,
I know what I'll take.
Besides the 38 points, he outscored by himself Atlanta in the fourth quarter. Atlanta only scored 17 points in the fourth quarter. Middleton had 20 by himself.
Those three pointed. I don't know if you've seen it, but those four, I think it was four or five, or I think it was four, three pointers in the space of, you know, no more than 2 minutes was just unbelievable.
He went on an absolute tear.
I know he can shoot the ball. I'll be honest. I didn't think he could shoot the ball that well, but oh my God, it was so good to see. It felt like one of those, it honestly felt like a little bit of an all-star game. Like, it just kept pounding and pounding and pounding, and just didn't let up.
And you've got to capitalize on that when you get into that into that little bit of a hot streak. You know what I mean? Like you've got to absolutely cash in and put Atlanta away, which is what they did. Look, they finished that game on a 25-9 run.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. Like you've got to cash in on the hot player. And you've got to finish that game, and you've got to finish off that team. Trae Young only had 3 points in that fourth quarter, but yep. That was obviously to do with as well that he didn't play a lot of that fourth quarter because he rolled his ankle. And I guess this is where sort of the injuries had sort of come into it, and that would have totally changed Atlanta's game plan going into game four. And look, they responded. I don't know what Milwaukee was sort of doing or thinking in that game four, but they were so solid. They were so pumped. The crowd was pumped, especially in game three. I love what the Atlanta crowd were doing in counting Adetokounmpo's seconds at the free throw line. That was fantastic. They're getting to 13, 14 seconds. It's so good.
Didn't they get a caution by the NBA or something? But yeah, I think it was hilarious. Why? It was so funny. I'm sure they got a caution. I could be completely wrong, but I'm sure I heard that they got a caution. But you are right. I mean, that game four. I mean, with the crowd noise and just how well they play. Well, I mean, one person in particular, obviously, because there was no Trae Young and Lou Williams having a career night himself and 21 points in that game.
That's right, and he just couldn't miss either. Like, you know, he wasn't taking a lot of shots. Like Bogdan Bogdanovic had sort of basically would have had to have become the number one, and it sort of went that way. Like Kevin Huerter was good as well, but yeah, Lou Williams was definitely the spark in that game that sort of kept Atlanta, you know, with their head above water and just sort of kept Milwaukee at bay, in game four. The stars for the Bucks weren't that terrific. Middleton and Drew Holiday weren't that great.
They were both restricted. Giannis was restricted as well in that
and
game.
Giannis was restricted, and then in that third quarter, that's where I guess the sort of the collective breath of the NBA and the Milwaukee Bucks organization sort of took a huge gasp when Giannis goes down, and I don't know if you saw it yourself, but that hyperextension did not look good at all. His knee really bent backwards. I thought pretty bad.
I honestly kind of thought, and this is why he's, leading into the other games, it wasn't as bad as I guess I thought. Purely, I don't know. I mean, obviously, he didn't play the next game, but my thought on is that I think that the replay, slowing the replay down, made it look worse than it actually was.
Oh, yeah.
That was my...
It totally did. It didn't look good at all. And look, Giannis in this game as well, I thought coming out really flat and didn't look like he had a lot of energy either. Look, he only had like 6 points in the first half, which is just not good enough, especially when the opposition team doesn't have their star guy and your star guy comes out flat and lackluster. Yeah. And before he actually got hurt, he really started to pour it on. Like he had 8 points, I think it was like four or five shooting in that third quarter before he went down. So he was really starting to get involved back in that game. And then for him to have that injury, it took the life a little bit out of the Bucks. But realistically,
you wouldn't think so. You wouldn't think so in that game five. I mean, yes, Giannis was out, but collectively as a team, they smashed. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say smashed, but they definitely beat pretty convincingly the Hawks in that game five. I mean,
I don't think that scoreline really reflects what that game was. I think that was just total and utter domination by Atlanta. It was roles reversed, really. It was Atlanta are like, oh, okay, cool. Like we don't have our star. They don't have their star. We need a bit of a collective effort, to really get ourselves back into it. And the only one that really stepped up to the plate was Bogdanovic. Like everybody else was pretty ordinary in that game. Like Kevin Huerter especially.
Yeah.
They needed him. They needed that to be a collective effort. And the Bucks just came out and they put on a Keyway in the post, get gritty down low clinic. And Brooke that was Lopez one... just destroyed Clint Capella, John Collins. He was in everything. He had a career playoff high, 33 points. And he put on an absolute clinic down low.
I'd even throw, who we haven't talked about yet in this series, Bobby Portis. Bobby Portis came
he's your hype man.
Yeah, he came to this side. I personally think when he comes to this side, it was not like his last chance, but I felt like he came to this side and he had to prove something. You know, being that sort of, I guess, that player, but he had to prove something. And, you know, he's only 26. Talking about growing, you know, he's 26. Yes, but he grew in this series. I mean, like you said, he's a hype man, and it all helps. And he's an aggressive player, which you definitely need. You know, you need that one sort of aggressive player. But he just surprised me. I'll put it this way.
He fed off the energy of the crowd. He was trying to get the crowd into it, trying to pump him up and everything. It was just one of those games where he was feeling it. And the rest of the team just really, sort of fed off that. And, you know, you had Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday were good in that game. Like I said, you know, Brooke Lopez was just the chief destroyer in that game. Put on just an absolute click. Look, the Bucks outscored Atlanta in the paint 66-36 in that game. That's what they kind of had to do, I guess, to sort of change things up. And that's what happens in playoff series is you get to know the team that you're playing fairly well, and you've got to come out there and you've got to, I guess, if you're Atlanta, expect the unexpected. And they just said they had no answer for Brooke Lopez under the basket.
Well, and even if you then translate that into sort of game six, wasn't so much they didn't have no answer for Brooke Lopez under the basket, but they didn't have no answer for their two guards, Chris Middleton and Drew Holiday, and you could tell he was lingering, but even with Trae Young.
Trae Young was so limited in that game.
He shouldn't have played it, personally.
If it wasn't an elimination sort of closeout game, I don't think he plays.
That kind of makes sense.
But, yeah, it's one of those things where it was basically all or nothing. He had to get out there to try and help his team, especially in Atlanta, maybe get the crowd into it as well, and to try and shake the Bucks, out of this game a little bit. And even if Trae wasn't that good, then other guys really sort of had to step up a little bit. But I think that game just really fell flat. They were pretty energyless. I thought Atlanta in that game six. And that's, I mean, everything comes from Trae Young. So if he's buoyed and he's got the energy, and he's riling the crowd up, then everybody sort of follows him. But it just didn't sort of translate that way. Once again, Kevin Huerter has been good these playoffs, but when they needed him the most, especially when they didn't have Trae Young, he didn't really step up to the mark.
No, I don't think
so. That's a great thing. He's only young.
He's 20. So this is their whole team.
Good experience for a lot of those Atlanta guys that are young.
Their whole team is pretty young, except for, a couple like Gallinari, Lou Williams, and Bogdanovich, if you want to throw him in as well, at 28. So Milwaukee finished it off. So the season's over for the Hawks. The Hawks, coming into sort of their offseason, they're in a pretty good position. So they'll end up having, after some of these contracts that are finished up, they'll only have $93 million on the books. So they've got a bit of money still to play with. Oh, runs through their names, who's out of contract, and you tell me if you think they just quickly if you think that if they should keep him or not. So Tony Snell.
I guess that's kind of a guy that you could possibly let go, but yeah, it's if he's going to be a rotation man, then that's
$12 million.
And that's something they've got to look at.
I don't think it's $12 million. I don't think so, personally.
No, and that's the thing. For a rotation person, and somebody who hasn't really contributed a whole lot, throughout the playoffs either, he might be a good regular season, sort of player, but when they start to really cut down the roster and cut down the rotation in the playoffs, it usually goes to like a seven or eight man rotation max.
yeah,
then I'm not sure if he can sort of keep that role and whether or not that's worth the money.
Re-sign Lou Williams or not?
I think so. I think he really helped.
I think so.
With a bit of experience throughout the playoffs, like he's been through plenty of playoff series with the Clippers. So I think if they can sort of get him, at a reasonable rate, I think it'd be money well spent.
It'd be around that $8 to $10 million mark, like he sort of got. So
I think that's totally worth it. Even though he's sort of playing a little, diminished minutes, especially throughout these playoffs, unless it was in the game that he started for Trae Young. He's been sort of playing the limited minutes off the bench, between 15 and 20 minutes. So, but that's all you need from him.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And the last one, John Collins, obviously, as we said before, do you match the offer?
It depends on how much the offer is. If there's going to be teams out there that are going to throw, 18 to 20 million out there for him and throw a four-year deal at him, then I think you try and match that.
See, interestingly enough, that was the contract he rejected. He rejected the four-year, $80 million contract. So, I don't know. I don't know if he thinks he's going to get like $100 million or something, but
look, and the way that he's played in these playoffs, then he might well do that. There'll be teams out there willing to splurge on him. Absolutely.
He's 23. He's only 23. So, and the rest of theirs, that's what I mean. I don't know if they re-sign him, that'll bump up the cap a bit. But then I don't know if then if you look for another sort of swingman, possibly, because you'll have a bit of money to play with in that sort of mid-level, or maybe a little bit more area. Because the rest of your Hunters, your Trae Youngs, your Cam Reddishes, Herder, they're all under $10 million. So obviously because they're still on rookie contracts. So
no, that's right.
So you have to
take advantage of that.
That's right.
While they're still on those lower rookie contract deals.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So that's what I mean. They're in a pretty good spot at the moment, I think. Absolutely.
And the thing is too, and coach wise as well, that they've come out and they've re-signed Nate McMillan.
Correct.
On a 4-year deal, who I guess has been a little bit of a major catalyst to this team.
Huge shining light
in their rise. Like, it's unbelievable. Under Lloyd Pierce, they were 14-20, and as soon as he got sacked, they finished the rest of the season 27-11. They've been 5-2 on the road in these playoffs coming into this series. Yeah. Like they have just been lights out, and they have been a really, really tough, especially for the home team, that they've really sort of just come out, and it doesn't matter where they're playing. Like look at what they did against the Knicks. Look at what they did against Philadelphia.
Yeah.
A very heavily favored Philadelphia 76ers, and they won two games there.
Yeah, I think they're in a perfect position. It'd be interesting to see who they possibly, if they go after like a veteran, or not even a veteran, like a sort of a key sort of player. But I don't know. I kind of like the way their squad's set up at the moment. If they keep obviously improving, clearly.
Well, and that's the thing. It's whether or not they can capture this lightning in a bottle again next year. So I guess now with what teams have seen against them, then now they can game plan against what that they've done. So
true.
it's going to be on Nate McMillan then to try and to keep what they're doing well, and he's going to have to change things up a little bit, because teams now are going to be ready for Atlanta, and that they'll get team's best shot, especially in that division as well, to try and derail them next year. So it's going to be how they have these, how they can sort of, not so much be different, but they've also got, they've got to accentuate what they do well and carry on with that, because they've made a huge turnaround this year, and hopefully that they can continue that, into next season. What have they got? They've got one. I think they've got the 20th pick next year as well. So what they do with that, if they want to take sort of, a bit of a project player,
later
in the draft.
Or they on-sell that to get something else possibly, because I think they've got enough.
That's right. You could package that up. I think they've got a couple of seconds as well, but,
I think they have enough. players like under 25 that they, you know, get that. That's the thing. Age is on their side. So they've got a lot of players that they, development players, so to speak, really. So
yeah, that's right. Well, that's, I mean, a few of them are really starting to, yeah, to step up to the mark now. Like, yeah, it's a, like you said, there is a lot of young players. They didn't have DeAndre Hunter for a lot of these playoffs. So, yeah, for them to sort of make the run that they did with the squad that they had is truly remarkable.
So we'll move on to the West, where Phoenix moved into their first finals in it's been a very, very long time, isn't it? No, it is their first.
Since 1993.
Yeah, since the Charles Barkley days.
That's right. Well, and that's the thing. Milwaukee are into their first NBA finals since 1974. This is a real sort of throwback. A final series and you know, a lot of people out there are saying, oh, you know, this is a disaster for the NBA and stuff like that. So it's not going to matter, man. Like this, the Phoenix and Milwaukee is going to be a really, really good series, I think, in the NBA finals. Like it just doesn't matter.
It doesn't, it's a disaster. I don't see that.
Want to have a boo-hoo because, oh, there's not an LA team in there.
They don't, especially like, is definitely didn't deserve it. And then look, the Clippers did pretty well. I honestly think to sort of get to this, you know, without obviously one of their star players in Kawhi Leonard predominantly, but they lost obviously in six games. And Phoenix led the series in every game. That was the glaring thing I noticed. I don't know if that played a, you know, a part in the back of the mind of the Clippers, but the Phoenix never let go. Like they never drew the series, the Clippers. They won every single, led every single the series in every single game up until obviously that game six, Phoenix. So they started strong, Phoenix. Like both the first two games, they
especially without Chris Paul. Like I thought that might have really played into the hands of the Clippers with no CP3 there, but they had another CP that's on the bench. And he just got better and better. You know, game one, he sort of filled in, I thought, pretty good with 11 points and 9 assists. Mm-hmm. Devin Booker was massive, a triple-double.
First triple-double.
In that game as well. And it just, you know, I guess you're not going to get super efficient games from everybody, especially your stars. But I thought PG, you know, even though he had, what a PG, yeah, did he have like 34 points or something like that? But, you know, it was 10 of 26. Like, that's not terrific. But the thing that I thought that they could have done a little bit better in this series was use DeMarcus Cousins a bit more, obviously, because they didn't have Serge Ibaka. I think a bigger body in the middle, I thought, would have helped them a little bit. And Rajon Rondo, I don't think they used him as much as what they could.
No, they did.
Isn't that the reason why they got him there?
Well, that's what I thought. I mean, DeMarcus Cousins in this, just to, you know, point out how big his body is in that sort of key. He only played 30 minutes, but he was able to quickly get those 11 points. So,
that's right.
And he drew some people out. Reggie Jackson sort of had a bit of a game in this as well, 24 points.
Reggie Jackson is going to get paid this offseason. Paid. Okay.
Don't know. The thing is, I don't know where. I agree. I totally agree.
There'll be teams. Man, the Pistons would have to be just like going, oh my god, like, could you not do this for us over the past couple of seasons? Do you know what I mean? Like, where the hell has this been? He's on a league minimum, like $500,000 this year, and he is going. Yeah, he is going to ching 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 cash in at the end of the year.
I mean, obviously he's going to get an inflated salary. He doesn't have age on his side. He's 31, but I agree what you mean. Like he, I mean, what did they draft him in the first round? Didn't they? Detroit. I'm pretty sure they were the ones that drafted him at 24. Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he was drafted the first round in the 24th pick.
Yeah, we'll
just
find
confirm
that out
in a second. But we'll move on to the second game. Again, Suns. I personally thought, and look, it was a close game. It's a close game. It was a long game.
My God.
That last minute felt like it was like, you know, 20 minutes when you throw in ads and everything like that they have to put on. It was
drafted by Oklahoma City. There you go.
Oklahoma City, interesting. But that, I mean, that the game itself was pretty even, I thought, like most of the way along the way. Cameron Payne, again, the CP you were talking about, come up good in this game with a team leading 29 points.
Just erupted, absolutely erupted in this game. He could not, and to say that he could not be stopped, which is a scary thing to sort of say, but they couldn't stop him.
No, they couldn't stop him. The thing that's obviously
this was one of the this was like one of the craziest endings.
Well, that's the thing that sticks
not
out.
So much a game, but even just a playoff game was just total insanity.
It I mean the way it finished, you know, to alley-oop to win the game and alley-oop, but this is what I couldn't work out. He only played 3 minutes. That is a perfect spot for someone like DeMarcus Cousins to be on DeAndre Ayton. Like as
that's right.
But they put him for some reason, because I watched it.
DeAndre Ayton is good laterally, like he's a good athlete. So whether they thought whether or not, you know, DeMarcus Cousins would be able to keep up with him.
No. But they put DeMarcus on the inbound, who wasn't even in the right position.
No, that's right. Exactly. Exactly.
They put him, his body should have been, and I watched it. I kept watching a couple of times. He should have had his body between the ball and the hoop. But he's sort of over here like this.
He's standing in front of him because correct. Look, I get it. There's only 0.9 seconds to go, and it's the only real play that is going to happen is you've got to time it perfectly. You've got to me. Do you know what I mean? Like it has to be some form of alley-oop, like a catch and shoot. Yes, you can do, but if you can get something uber close to the hoop, then you've got to be looking for that.
But that's and Zubac just did not even sort of come off that pick that well as well. He tried to roll off it, and then whoever, I can't remember who the other player
was. It was Devin Booker that hit him.
Yeah, that's right. But the other player didn't fall off on the Clippers, didn't fall back off that pick and roll. But it was, it took forever. But that was just a phenomenal finish.
But you even go to before that, like, you know, it's Paul George, you know, that LA is up 103-102, and PG is fouled with 9 seconds left, and he bricks both free throws to basically put that game out to it. That they have to get a three-pointer to tie the game. So for him to sort of come up a little bit limp in that, it just sort of, I mean, it comes up a lot. You know, PG is sort of a fairly heavily scrutinized player, you know, especially when you come out and self-proclaim that you're playoff P. That doesn't really help your own situation. But, yeah, just the way that he sort of, He missed those two free throws. It sort of looked like it was telling a little bit. And the funny thing was, if you listen, you know, if you watch the game as well, Jeff Van Gundy actually called that play.
Yeah, he did.
For it to be an alley-oop to DeAndre Ayton to be able to just tap it in. And a lot of people have you know, sort of when it happened and everything cracked up because the ball was basically inside the cylinder. And you know, in the NBA, you're not allowed to touch the ball, but it's a live ball because nobody has touched the ball. It hasn't touched the hoop. It hasn't touched a player. So it's totally legal and right what they did and how that
totally
went in. There was nothing wrong with it.
No. That's you're allowed to do that. I've seen that plenty of times.
That is the first touch.
That is the first. As soon as it touched the ball, that is the first touch. That's 100%. That was fine. It was a brilliant, obviously. And absolutely.
I think a lot of people had sort of cracked up about this game as well, because basically the last 92 seconds of that game went for over 30 minutes due to replays, people watching that, and I was watching that, and people in the crowd would have been losing their freaking mind going, why are these replays taking so long? You know, balls that have been knocked out of bounds. Things like that, replaying fouls and stuff like that. It was brutal to watch minute and a half. Like, yeah, I understand that, you know, usually NBA games, because there's stoppages, especially say in the last 5 minutes or so of games, can take, you know, a long time. If they might take 15 or 20 minutes, but for the last 92 seconds to take over half an hour of real time. That's out of control.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was. It was out of control. Look, next two games, the Clippers at least sort of came back in that game three and won 106-92. I don't know what your thoughts are on that game.
I mean, Chris Paul come back in that game. I thought it took the Suns a little bit to get readjusted to playing back with Chris Paul, the way that he sort of dominates the ball a bit. I thought he was a little slack in that game. Like, he was only 5-for-19. He still had 12 assists, 15 points, 12 assists. Like, that's not too bad. But I just thought that they were had a little bit of a readjusting period, especially after they played so well in those first two games with Cameron Payne playing the point, that it was just, they were a little out of sync offensively, I think. And that tells with the 92 points that they put up on the board. I thought the person that sort of affected the most was Devin Booker, because he basically had to try and create a lot of things on his own and getting used to not having to create as much for yourself. And he went 5-for-21. So I thought that sort of killed the momentum a little bit for the Suns. And look, Paul George, he was massive in this game. He put those two free throws he missed behind him in game two. He was huge. 27 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists. Massive.
Even Marcus Morris, like, he was close to being out of this game, and he come up clutch and hit those two big three pointers in the second half.
Oh, two massive threes. Look, Luke Kennard, like, has been with the limited time and the limited shots that he's had, but some of the shots that he's making, they're crucial shots.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And they absolutely need those, especially without Kawhi Leonard in this for this whole entire series.
You see, just before the game, Devin Booker end up contacting Rip Hamilton to ask him about how it felt wearing the mask.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, him and Pat Beverly had a head clash in that in the third quarter of that game too. And that looked, I mean, it looked a little innocuous, but both of them sort of come out reeling out of that, and I think that's probably got a little bit.
Look, Booker came more reeling out of it than anything.
Devin Booker's face was so swollen that would have been so hard to wear that mask.
It was. And he said he spoke to Rip Hamilton, who obviously it became a trademark. He didn't even need it towards the end of his career, but he just kept it as a trademark.
He just wore it because some people are superstitious like that.
And not that it helped him in this game, but he said the advice was good, just how you adjust to it and everything like that. Then game four, the Suns sort of survived, I guess, more this game. It was more of a defensive battle that game four, and 84-80.
Slugfest. That is a true, mid 90s, late 90s, slugfest of a playoff score, 84-80.
It was just one of those defensive games that I thought. This is where it's sort of slowly, Paul George again had a nice double double on a losing side, but you can just slowly tell that guy was getting gassed because he was doing so much.
Well, he's played up until the end of this series. He'd played the most playoff minutes this season by more than 100 minutes, and the person who had played that less 100 minutes was Devin Booker. So he is just playing. He's just playing huge minutes. And a lot of that would have come from this series because he's got no choice. Like, that, they've got to run Paul George out there as much as humanly possible because they don't have Kawhi Leonard.
That's exactly right. They had no choice. So,
five for 20 in that game. Like, 12 for 18 again. Gas. Free throw shooting, especially in a close game in a defensive sort of slugfest like that. Like, free throw shooting let him down, and it let the team down. Such a close game, to only shoot 65% collectively as a team from the free throw line, you can't do that. They're 3 points, not 3 points, 3 points.
They're 3 points.
And in a game that's like this, that you only lose by four, that's a premium.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, the other thing I noticed in this game was compared to the other games, and this is for both sides, hence you could sort of tell it was a slugfest, was that not many, you know, there was pretty low 15 and 17 offensive rebounds for each team. When you sort of see that, you just know that it's going to be sort of a drowning out sort of defensive sort of game. The defensive rebounds on both sides were huge, but the offenses were just, you know, 15 and 17 collectively. It's always lower, don't get me wrong. It was just glaringly staring out to me.
Yeah, no, that's right. Yeah. And DeAndre Ayton had 9 offensive rebounds himself.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, to me, just like he is really, really set himself a high standard at the moment. Hopefully he can sort of, he can continue that on, because he looks like the beginnings of a really good player. And I think a lot of people out there would have been saying, why in the hell did the Phoenix Suns take this guy and not Trae Young or not Luka Doncic or anything like that? But he's just been a really good fit for this team. And that's the kind of center and the kind of player that CP3 likes to play with.
I will always say this, because there's not many. When you have a true center, they can play like that. A true center.
He's so athletic, though.
A true center that can play like that on the draft. You are as good as Luka Doncic is, and he's obviously better than DeAndre Hunter. You are going to pick a center because you're going to get 5 years of, you know, 4 to 5 year rookie contract on a really good center before you have to sort of pay him, which is like everybody else.
But the thing is, you don't have to pay centers anymore. That's the thing. Like, you can still get him at a discounted rate after his rookie deal.
I guess what I'm saying is it's harder to find centers, is what I'm getting at.
No, that's exactly right.
So.
And if he can be, you know, if he can continue on this road to improvement, then he'll be one of the best centers in the league without a doubt.
I mean, you know, obviously you got Joel Embiid in there as well. They're the two, and I don't know. I don't think he's a center in Nuggets. He's just lost. I've just lost his name.
Oh, Jokic.
Jokic. I don't know how not to call him a center, even though he's 7 foot.
He's a point center.
Because he just does everything, that guy. He looks. It's funny. He's 7 foot, but he looks, because he can throw the ball and everything, he looks small. I don't know. That sounds weird because he towers over people, but because he just holds a ball like that and just like, you know, see you later. Oh, man, I'd love to have a player like that. Just like. Yeah, just run routes Sorry, I'm thinking NFL. Just cut the lane, and he'll give you the ball.
He's taken over as the new unicorn. Like, everybody had said that Chris Tapps Porzingis was the unicorn. It's not. It's Nikola Jokic. He is the unicorn.
The game four. You know, the Clippers sort of got a pretty gritty win in this game. I know it didn't really sort of stand out to me in that game five. It was more game six I wanted to talk about purely because of the blowout. You know, they just absolutely, especially in that final quarter of that game six, you know, 33-20, it was, they really, really, really blew them out.
They took them to town, and they were the ones that they wanted, you know, I, as much as you don't like to have that cliche, they wanted it more, but. Man, CP3 was massive in this game.
He had
31 points in the second half of that 41 points. He was hitting clutch shot after clutch shot, threes, mid-range jumpers, floaters. He was everywhere in this game. And that's, I mean, he was the one that's put this team on his back and said, nah, we are going to close them out now. He was 7 for 8 from downtown.
Yeah.
Like, how about Torrey? He was amazing in this
game. How about Torrey Craig in this game chiming in with 28 points?
Off the bench, Torrey, man.
Yeah, I didn't see that at all, obviously. But Chris Paul that's all that you could just sort of see. He wanted this game more than everybody. Not that the whole team collectively didn't. He was amazing in this game. He was absolutely like, you know, for all of what has been said about what he did get sort of paid or what he's on now, it's easily justified, isn't it? If you can get your team to a final, we're playing
the result now, aren't we? Again, you know, we're playing the results game. Like, he's carried Phoenix to an NBA Finals. He was a legitimate MVP candidate this year. He was a legitimate MVP candidate last year on just a decimated Oklahoma City team. And within 2 years, he's reinvented himself, you know, from being so close with the Houston Rockets for a couple of years, with him at that, the Clippers not being able to get out of the second round with the talented team that they had there at the Clippers for so long, with Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan and himself like that, and Lou Williams, and they couldn't get out of the second round. And he's come out there as a 36-year-old, and he has just totally reinvented himself, not so much reinvented the narrative on himself, but it's unbelievable what, you know, people had been saying beforehand and what people are saying about him now. And it's like you said, is it justifying the contract? That's a lot of money that he's being paid at the moment.
Of course it is, but yeah, I think it does. Honestly, like you said, he proves it. We'll see what happens next year, but he proved it.
And look, he got under everybody's skin so much that the guy on the opposite team, on the Clippers, that loves to get under everybody's skin in Pat Beverly, just completely and utterly lost his mind. Just totally lost his mind.
Oh, he lost his mind, all right. That was a big sort of push.
That was a big shove. Like,
I'm surprised
That was just a total brain snap.
I'm surprised Chris Paul didn't come back at him, like, to be honest.
Man, he was laughing and clapping and putting his hands in the air and everything. That's just true. I am the one now that's gotten under your skin. After all that, that is just true. It was unbelievable the way that he sort of reacted to it. He knew the game was in the bag. There was no way he was going to lose his composure over that. And Patrick Beverley, Patrick Beverley, you know, obviously got ejected, after doing that. Look, the Clippers, they got within 7 in this game. And then in the fourth quarter, they said, you know, they just, the Suns just totally ballooned that game out with, you know, big shot after big shot. And the Clippers couldn't hang with them.
No, they couldn't. They really couldn't. Clippers off season. I mean, next year's on the books will be $148 million. It actually increases from this year of $138 million. So I'm assuming, what are they just completely relying on what's going to happen with Kawhi Leonard? Is that fair to say? I don't even know.
I mean, he's got their balls in a vice grip, hasn't he?
I don't know. And that's right. He could say yes. I honestly kind of think he's going to say yes, because he was injured this pretty much a lot this season, and I don't know if anyone's going to pay him just sort of seeing that. Yes, it's Kawhi Leonard. I get that, but maybe teams don't really need to load manage.
That's the thing. By the looks of it, this is just what he's going to be for the rest of the foreseeable future. He has been that since he's left San Antonio. The season that he had with Toronto, the two seasons now that he's had with the Clippers, you're just not going to get any more than 50-odd. You know, you'd be lucky to get 60 games out of him. And some teams, they can't afford that. They need to have, if they're going to have a star player on their side, they're lucky that they've got the luxury of Paul George there, who can sort of step up and fill the void when Kawhi Leonard's not there. But if you're a team that doesn't already have, you know, a big star there, you can't afford to have Kawhi Leonard on your team if he's only going to be playing 50 to 60 games a year, and you know that he's going to play those games.
Not at $36 million, you can't afford it.
I just don't think you can. And that's, I mean, I get it. He's tuning his body for a big playoff run. This was a real chance for the Clippers. You know, they got past the second round of the playoffs this year. They made it to the conference finals, and you lose Kawhi Leonard by just a little innocuous little landing on his troublesome knee, and boom, that's it. It's done.
They also
He can't recover in 10 to 12 days like that. That's no good.
They also have to contend with that Luke Kennard contract that they signed recently. I mean, that was you know, it was 5 years, so it balloons from 5 million out to 12 million because he signed a 4-year $48 million contract. So
I think he can be a real contributor there.
I think so. I'm not completely out on him. I still think there's plenty of time for him, but yeah, look, I think they just have to wait and just see what Kawhi's going to do. I don't think they have any other option, really.
No, there's no other option but to run this back.
And I don't think Kawhi should do anything but give it another year, personally. I think he'll have to. I mean, Marcus Morris, yes, he's only a $64 million contract for the next 4 years, including this year, I should say, but he was fairly contributing in this game or this series. Probably didn't justify what he's getting paid, but he definitely contributed. So
look, I think the Serge Ibaka, like, they got him in for a reason as well. For this team and for them to lose him for this playoff run as well, and basically not having a whole lot of depth at that center position and having to use Zubac a lot, I think that hurt them as well. And look, it's a war of attrition. It's a lot of it comes down to teams being healthy. Like, have a look at the Phoenix Suns. They've dealt with a few little injuries, but they haven't really had the catastrophic injury that keeps that team out of it. So in the first round they faced the Lakers. Yeah, AD was a huge cog in that Lakers machine. He plays poorly. He tries to come back and doesn't play well. In the Denver series, they didn't have Jamal Murray at all. So everything is rested on Michael Porter Jr., who's still only young, and obviously the reigning MVP. They get swept. This series, they don't have Kawhi the whole time. So, Phoenix, again, have run into a team which doesn't have a primary star of that team. And that's extremely fortuitous, but them's the breaks.
That's exactly right. Them's the breaks. No, I thought the same thing.
CP3 missed time throughout the early part of the playoffs. He missed the first two games in this series. You know, they've overcome injuries to key players, the Phoenix Suns.
Well, so we'll just finish on a little bit of news. I mean, we'll stick with the NBA before we finish on something so that I guess, well, it's not, well, lighthearted, but, you know, I guess to push our boys. But the coaches, so while we named not long ago some, obviously, coaches that have moved on, let go, fired, however you want to put it, they have appointed some coaches for some teams. I mean, if we start
and
at
look
top
these of, all these signings too, these four signings that we're about to say were all done in about 3 or 4 days.
There was plenty of interviews sort of going everywhere, but Boston
and now there's been total silence on that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was these deals were made and then all of a sudden crickets.
Boston have signed Ime Udoka from the 76ers. He was a former 76ers assistants coach.
I mean,
it's hard when you don't know
Brad
the
Stevens
person.
First, so, yeah, first big deal other than shipping Kemba Walker out the door. Yeah. But look, I guess he's sort of seen potential in Ime Udoka. So, you can't really, judge a book by its cover. So we've got to wait and see how he comes in and relates to the star guys there, like Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's right. There's not much to say because I think it's still, we'll just have to wait and see.
That's a definite wait and see.
The next one, the Dallas Mavericks. So Nico Harrison, they've signed as GM, but the coaching gig has gone to one former player, Jason Kidd. What do you think of that?
Former championship winner there, so... look, I know a lot of people sort of, don't really like the way that Jason Kidd sort of has had his coaching career, a little bit in Brooklyn. A lot of people sort of don't like the way that he used Giannis, when he was at the Bucks. But in J. Kidd's defense, he didn't have this Giannis. He had a very young Giannis Antetokounmpo who was, finding his body, finding his game. And for people to just rip on him, straight up and go, oh, have a look at what Antetokounmpo has become. It's like, there's a key word in that, become. When J. Kidd was there, he was very young, very raw. So everybody can see the potential. Some coaches can get that potential out earlier than others, and some can't. So I don't think that's a real knock on Jason Kidd and his coaching ability.
Well, he became a head coach immediately, if everyone doesn't remember, leading Brooklyn to that second round of the playoffs in his debut. Sure. So he has the credentials. I don't know how much part he's had in it, but you'd think, you know, having him there and then sort of coaching, helping, minding Luka Doncic, that's going to be obviously the key. The relationship between those two has to be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have to do everything humanly possible to keep Luka Doncic happy. And if this is the way to do it, then that's the coach that you hire. Like, simple.
Indiana Pacers have signed Rick Carlisle. He wasn't going to last long.
No way. Clearly the best candidate out there.
Yeah, exactly. Return to the franchise he coached back in 2003-2007. So I'm assuming just because of the ties he had there, because it was, I found it a perplexing move up until I remembered that's right, he used to be a coach there. So
yeah, no, that's right.
Because like you just said, because he was clearly the most, you know, everybody would have been chiming after him. I'd say Portland would have been going hard after him, but he's gone back.
I think all seven of those teams that had head coaching vacancies would have all been after Rick Carlisle.
That's exactly right. And the final one, Chauncey Billups gets his first head coaching gig at the Portland Trailblazers.
I guess another one that's sort of not so much come out of left field, but I think a lot of people have been calling for Mr. Big Shot to get a coaching gig. And boy, is he going to step into a little bit of an awkward situation, to say the least, at Portland with how their season ended. How a lot of people out there are saying that this team should be completely blown up, whether or not they get rid of either one of their massive backcourt in CJ McCollum or Damian Lillard, which I find just absolutely ludicrous. But that's just my opinion on that. And whether or not he can sort of change things up. So, Terry Stotts has been there for what, 8-9 years at Portland, and you know, like we talked about after they got eliminated, like they've had one, you know, good juicy run into the conference finals, and then, you know, three out of the other 4 years, they got dumped in the first round. So it's feast or famine for the Portland Trailblazers and a good regular season side and a very dangerous regular season side. But when it comes down to the playoffs, you're playing each team at least four times. So you have to adjust, and was Stotts the right man to be able to make these adjustments for playoff basketball?
Personally, in fairness, they had some injuries during the whole season. You know, Jusuf Nurkić didn't hardly even play during the season, so among other players, and he was great for that run into the finals the year before.
No, that's right. Yeah, exactly.
So, we'll finish on, I guess, it's lighter note in terms of, you know, the Olympics, which I thought was never going to come, has come around.
They've come around. They're going to be spectatorless, but they've come around.
Yeah, they have come around. So the Boomers have announced, their final spots for their team that's going to destined to go to Tokyo. I think there was 12. They started at 19, but obviously whittled it down to 12. So yeah. I'll go through the names. Aaron Baines. Look, most of these names you'll know just from the NBA. Matthew Dellavedova. Dante Exum. Chris Goulding. Joshua Green. Joe Ingles. Nicholas Kay. Jock Landale. Patty Mills, that is fourth. Him and Joe's at their fourth Olympic Games.
And then a few flag bearer.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, and then a few debutants at the end here: Jewett Reith, Nathan Sobey, and I forgot honestly that this guy
Matisse Thybulle.
Yeah, that's
absolutely
good.
Yeah, that's
gonna be that's a future. That's, you know, I mean, look, Ben Simmons is out for reasons of Ben Simmons. However you want to take it, he's not playing. But
Matisse, you know why he's not playing? He's working on his shot, aka hanging out at Wimbledon and getting busy in the crowd.
So you mean he's shooting his shot is what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, no, that's right. He's shooting his shot, all right. You know, but it ain't on the court and it ain't with a basketball.
I forgot Matthias Thybulle was was an Australian player, but that, you know, that's a decent future. Matthias Thybulle, you could throw in a couple other ones, you know, Dante Exum, obviously Ben Simmons and a couple others. So look, what do you think? Not a bad squad.
I think that is a real solid squad. I think a real solid squad.
Yeah, I think so.
They've got the shooters. They've got the shooters there. Sobey can shoot the lights out. We all know what Chris Golding can do. Paddy Mills can shoot the lights out. Yeah, I think they've got two really good big men. Nick Kay is a rebounding machine. Aaron Baines is a big body there. Like I think they've got a pretty well balanced side. Even Jock Landale, like, you know, he's 6'7", 6'8". Like they've got a pretty decent side.
Yeah, no, I think, and it's a good mix too. Like, it's a good of youth, and a lot of debuts, but youth, and then obviously you got your experienced guys and Baines, Dellavedova, who's obviously now, if you didn't sort of catch our page, playing in the NBL come next year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, straight up after Melbourne United have won the championship in the NBL this season past. Wham, they go out and sign Matthew Dellavedova. That is huge. That's massive for the NBL in this country.
Yeah, because he's still 30. So I'm honestly surprised he probably could get another one or two year contract in the NBA. But
he wants to play. That's the thing. Coming towards the end, once you're 30, you just want to play. You don't want to be playing garbage minutes.
Good point.
Do you know what I mean? Like that's all he was doing. Yeah, even when he signed that deal with the Bucks. He wasn't really getting, I don't think, a fair shake of what he could be. And after a while, you're just like, I don't want to do all this training and get 5 minutes when it's garbage time and it's worthless to me. So for him to come back and to play, I think, a starring role back here in the NBL, back in his home state of Victoria, I think's huge for him.
And it's a 3-year contract, so it's not a small contract. So
no, that's right,
like
exactly. Like it's going to be. He's going to finish off his career here in Australia, and it's great.
Yeah, I think it'll be massive for the NBL. Or at least on the start, it'll be massive for the NBL. I guess just to finish off, what do you think of our chances? I mean, I'm sick of finishing fourth. I'll tell you that much.
I'll tell you what, I'm sick of finishing fourth, and I'm sick of that Spanish team. I'll tell you that much. Look. I think that they are. They're a realistic chance. Like they've got, they're going over to Vegas as we speak right now. They've got a few exhibition games. They've got an exhibition game against Argentina, US, and Nigeria. And look,
the US team. Oh,
that's the big one. That's the big test of what do you know what I mean? Of what they're going to.
That wasn't going to put many players in, or they weren't going to play. God damn, they're stacked. Oh my god.
Oh no, yeah, absolutely, yeah, of course they are. Right. So I think that the Boomers with the group that they're in Group B, I think they've got a pretty cruisy run. Into the elimination part of Olympics. Look, they've got Nigeria, Italy, and Germany. Yeah. So, look, I think they should really rumble through that, you know, that pool and really give themselves a good shot. If they can go through the pool stage undefeated and just stay away from the United States, then they've got a real, you know, and be, you know, either be on the opposite side of the bracket or hope that somebody else can knock off the US in an elimination game, which doesn't seem likely to happen, but I'll take a bronze. I'll take a bronze.
Oh yeah,
we should have got last Olympics.
No, I and you're right. I mean, the team, Nigeria could be completely out of the blue sort of team, but the Italian and the German team, if you look at their Eurobasket sort of qualifications, they haven't been They both haven't been, you know, going great guns, really, at the end of the day. I mean, they've got, I mean, the German side's got a young side. That'll be an up-and-coming side. I think Dennis Schroeder and a couple of others. But, yeah, the Nigerian team will be one of those teams that you can't take lightly, you know what I mean? I don't, like, yeah, they've got, well, you know, they've got a young side in themselves as well. So I'm pretty sure, like, even though he technically could play for them, they're not going to, Giannis isn't going to play for them, is he? Because he's not from Nigeria. That's where he's from. I'm assuming his brother's going to play.
I haven't heard a lot about what Giannis is going to do come the end of the season. I know that there's a couple of guys that are in the US team. I think it's Booker, Drew Holiday, and I think Chris Middleton are all going to basically go straight from the NBA Finals straight to Tokyo. So
That'll be the hard team. Was it 2015? They won the gold. I think it was in the FIBA World Cup. You know, considering I think the US weren't in that, but that'll be. I mean, they got Mike Brown as their head coach, so that'll be that tough team in that draw.
Oh, absolutely.
Mike Brown. Well, I did not realize that. Obviously, you know, Google's always a good friend, but yeah, Mike Brown's their head coach. So, if Giannis plays, Jesus Christ, forget about it. But
no, that's right.
I think they've got Precious
and
Anywhere.
The US, like the US have got it. I think that basically their only hard game in the group standings will be against France. They've got Iran and the Czech Republic there. Like the Czechs will probably be a tough game as well. Like I said, you know, we've got a fairly easy road into the elimination. Into the elimination part of it. And then Group C, Argentina, Japan, Spain, Slovenia, that's a bit of a group of death, really. I think that could go anyway.
Yeah, that is a serious group of death. My God, that's going to be tough. Oh, at least been on that side.
Tough, tough group.
At least been on that side, which is good.
No, that's right.
Well, I think that covered everything we wanted to cover in our, second to final NBA pod, I guess, for this sort of season. We will touch on, obviously, draft and other little bits, that especially the off-season. You know, the off-season, like always, is just as exciting. Well, probably won't be this year, but because there's already signed sort of players, but just as exciting as the regular season. The finals is always the best. I don't care what people say.
Right. Yeah, and this final series is gonna be awesome. Like somebody's gonna either win their first championship ever or their first championship in a hell of a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't think that's bad for the league at all. And that's coming from, you know, obviously you're a Lakers fan for them to not be in the finals and LeBron James to not be a part of. You know, of a lot of the playoffs, I really don't think has hurt the NBA as much as everybody says.
I don't think so at all. I honestly don't think so. The only thing that's probably affected is it, you know, not having the advertising for his Space Jam movie. Honestly,
honest,
I think that's all that's affected. So, I like it. I will stay in the West. I think they've got their team is just. I think, you know, Chris Paul and their team is just well set up to win. Honestly, I wouldn't have thought it. I'll be completely honest, but I think they're well set up to win.
No, I think Phoenix gets it done in six or seven. Yeah. I've got an extreme soft spot. I love CP3, so I really want to see him get a championship. Him be the part, you know, like a main reason of them winning a championship, not just getting, you know, a cheap ring. Later on in his career, where he's not a big contributor, like he is a major, major contributor to this Phoenix Suns team, and I really, really would love to see him get a ring. I think the Bucks will have more chances later on, you know, in the future, you know, with Giannis and the players that they've got there, Chris Middleton, Drew Holiday. I think they're set up to win. You know, they're set up to win now, but they're also, you know, set up for the future. Whereas I think Phoenix have got a little bit more of a smaller window, and they really have to capitalize on this now.
Yep. No, totally agree. Don't forget our socials, Twitter at Final Play Pod. Facebook is always Final Play Podcast, where you'll see all the links. And you know, shout out again you know, always as to eureka.com.au, our Gimco. They always have our pods up. Obviously, although the main spot to get our pod, because it's free and everybody can get it from there. It's all free, obviously, I should say, but Spotify is probably the best place. So it's easy. They download straight away. Yeah, it's Spotify is the way to go. So you just, if you give us a like and a follow, that'll be good, because then they'll automatically, like I said last week, they download straight away. They're auto-downloaded ready for you each time.
Spotify is the way to go. So check us out on there. Check us out on SoundCloud. You know, obviously, gimco.com.au, Eureka Sports Cards. Check those guys out. They're always great to us. So, you know, we always try and give them a nice little cheap pop, as Mick Foley would say. So, you know, they're always great to us. And so check those guys out. Check us out on SoundCloud as well. Give us a like and a follow on there. But also, I guess there's a certain fruit that's out there that doesn't have our podcast that we don't really like at the moment. So, but if we can ever get that certain fruit to be part of our podcast lineup, it'd be terrific. just clearing my throat a little bit there.
That's
also
good.
Sort of looking at getting, you know, maybe involved in Google Podcasts as well. So try and get our stuff on Google Podcasts. So it's, you know, just make it easier for everybody to find us out there. But we're pretty easy to find. If you go through our Facebook page, that's where, you know, 99% of our stuff is on there. Easy. Also Twitter as well. So, you know, that's at Final Plate Pod. You know, check us out on Twitter as well. But yeah, that's what I mean. That's the easiest way to find us on Facebook. Our links, you know, with SoundCloud and Spotify are on there, and then you can find us. You can go straight to our page that are on those sites, and then you can like us from there and give us a follow.
Well, have a good week, everyone. My name's Jason. Look, anybody in the West, go to the West. So go to the Suns for the finals, Smith.
Yeah, look, I guess they're going to be, I can only assume they'll be the sentimental favourite, I guess,
for everybody,
for the championship. But I'm pretty sure that they've been installed as the betting favourites as well for this series. So we'll see how we go. So I'll sign off as Miles. Let's get a bet on the NBA Finals plus.
Shout out to Sportsbet then. Sportsbet, I should say. Sorry.
Shout out to Nets. Like, you know, get us some betting action on there. But
that's right.
I think it should be a long. I don't think it'll be a short series. I think it'll be 6 or 7 games.
We don't have to get, you know, these sponsors out there. We don't have to get paid in actual money. If we get paid in $100 line of credit on the sports bet each week.
I got no problems with that.
Have a good week, everyone.
No problems with that at all.
See ya.
Let's go.